helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. Whenever I talk about the militia, someone comments that they wouldn't stand a chance against the U.S. military. Tell that to the Taliban, the Ukrainians, or for that matter, George Washington. But see, that gave me an interesting thought. See, according to my research, during the Revolutionary War, only about 3% of the colonists actually fought for independence, while roughly one-third supported it. I wonder, if our current distasteful disagreements were to devolve into a national divorce and subsequent war, would people stand up and defend their state against federal aggression? Or would they take the defeatist attitude that there was nothing they could do? Were Americans in the 18th century more interested in liberty than they are in the 21st century? Are Americans more concerned with their comfort than their liberty? Should the federal government try to enforce an illegal law against the states, would the end be more like Yorktown or Appomattox? Hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free, and I am so glad you could join me today. You know, today it's kind of a David versus Goliath. Would a state militia stand any chance against the federal military complex? And what would that look like? What would that mean? Now, I guess I'm not so much interested simply in the tactical debate, the war-making debate, but what it means, what the American people think, how the American people would respond. See, there's a story I like to tell about the Battle of Lexington. I like to remind people the shot heard around the world, the battles of Lexington and Concord, were started because of gun control. They were started because the British figured out that the best way to quiet, to subjugate the American people was first to disarm them. And while they were also looking for, I believe it was Jefferson and Adams, they had orders to confiscate the gunpowder of the colonists. And that's much of what led to the Revolutionary War, at least the shooting part of the war. So when I saw this interview with Pat Fay, he's an assemblyman in the state of New York, and they're looking to pass an ammo tax. And he stated in his own words, so if you buy 50 rounds, it'll just be a couple of extra dollars. So it's not a huge tax, but another disincentive to arming up. Ammo taxes, all these regulations making it harder for the American people to arm themselves, to protect themselves. So why all the brouhaha about being armed? I mean, what could it do? What would it matter if the people were armed, if they were able to form a militia? I mean, you're talking about the U.S. military, right? They got all the big guns. They've got all the planes and weaponry and tanks. I mean, what good would it do? Well, again, I'm not here to have a tactical discussion about an insurgency versus a mechanized army. I mean, I think the evidence really stands for itself. You know, look at the Taliban. Yeah, it took them 20 years, but America is not the first mechanized army they were able to defeat using primarily light arms. Or the Ukrainians, again, started with light arms. They've acquired better arms over time, but you have a severely outmatched local militia standing up to a world power. And I point to George Washington because at the time, America didn't have much of a military. It was mostly militias. It was mostly farmers and merchants with guns against the largest, most well-resourced army in the world. And yet, all these cases, the underdog won. David beat the Goliath. But I think there's a more fundamental question here. See, James Madison said the advantage of being armed, which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation, the existence of subordinate governments to which the people are attached and by which the militia officers are appointed, forms a barrier against the enterprises of ambition more insurmountable than any which a simple government of any form can admit of. See, it's not just people with arms. It's the fact that we're attached to our state governments, that we would fight for our states, that makes it more insurmountable than any other army that could be put together. Or as Richard Henry Lee put it, whereas to preserve liberty, it is essential that the whole body of the people always possess arms and be taught alike, especially when young, how to use them. And lastly, Noah Webster, who said, before a standing army can rule, the people must be disarmed as they are in almost every kingdom of Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword because a whole body of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any bands of regular troops that can be, on any pretense, raised in the United States. A military force at the command of Congress can execute no laws but such as the people perceive to be just and constitutional, for they will possess the power and jealously will instantly inspire the inclination to resist the execution of a law which appears to them unjust and oppressive. So when I see all these politicians trying to find ways to either take away or restrict your access to arms, I know what they want. They want to oppress the American people. They want them dependent on government for their livelihood, for their protection. Think about it. If you cannot protect yourself, if you can't protect your children because you don't have arms, who's going to do it for you? Oh, government. So when government says, you know, maybe we shouldn't do such a thing because it wouldn't seem right, but it leaves your children exposed. Well, they get away with it because you have no other choice. I give you, for example, Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut. Now, he made a statement that said, this, by the way, was in Salon. He said, it's beyond me why Republicans who claim to care about the health of our kids don't seem to give a crap about our children who are being exposed to these epidemics, cataclysmic rises of gun violence. Well, Mr. Murphy, the answer is you're talking out of your butthole. You see, you claim to believe that the only way to protect kids from gun violence is to punish law-abiding citizens. You, I believe, voted against a measure brought by another senator that would have provided resources to have armed law enforcement at schools. That's right, having armed people with arms at schools, not individuals, not regular citizens, law enforcement. And you voted against it. Could it be because it didn't involve taking guns away from law-abiding citizens? Could it be it because you didn't like the idea of having guns in school except by criminals? Or could it simply be that it was proposed by the opposite political party? See, Mr. Murphy is a Democrat, and it was proposed by Ted Cruz, who is a Republican. Who doesn't give a crap about our children? Because all the evidence shows gun control. By the way, it was already illegal. They were talking about the Nashville mass murder. It was already illegal for that woman to bring those guns on campus. How did that help? How did another law help? It didn't. But you see, in Chris Murphy's mind, it appears if you're dependent on government to protect you, that's fine. If it means that people who illegally get guns and illegally take them to schools, well, that's okay. As long as we get the hands out of the guns of, well, maybe it's people we don't like. So when President Biden signs an executive order to further restrict your access to guns, illegal background checks, mandating illegal storage, other, you know, giving money to law enforcement agencies to steal your firearms with no due process, what I see is a government trying to disarm the American people, not that unlike the British in 1775 when they sent the military to confiscate the weapons, the firearm, the gunpowder, and the ammunition and the powder houses of the colonists. But Paul, what's that going to do against F-15s? I mean, even Joe Biden said you couldn't do anything. You don't have any F-15s. Like I said, take a look at the Taliban. Taliban didn't have F-15s, yet they were able to fight. The Ukrainians at first didn't have F-15s. They still fought. But to me, there's actually a more fundamental question that we should be asking. If the American people would fight, not because they know they could win, but simply because it's the right thing to do. It's defending their rights. It's defending their liberty. It's defending their families. Would we give up our right to defend ourselves because the odds against winning against the U.S. military were bleak? I'm not saying it'd be easy. There'd be a lot of variables that would need to be looked at, right? How much of the U.S. military would actually engage in armed combat against U.S. citizens? How many would refuse to? How many would defect to the other side and bring their weapons and tactics with them? We don't know. But to me, the concern is not the tactics. It's the attitude of, if I'm not guaranteed a fairly easy win, I don't even want to fight. Or even worse, recognizing the, not just the disparity of power, but the unjustness of that disparity of power, are unwilling to do something to restore equilibrium, to restore the balance, so that the American people are the ones in charge. That government gets its power from our consent, not from force of arms. But again, we have the federal government trying to disarm people. Now, I understand there are situations where a person should be disarmed, where that person is a danger to themselves or others. But like the way this country is supposed to work is there's supposed to be this thing called due process, where that individual's rights are protected. Now, I there was a case not that long ago where the federal government, first of all, butted in where they don't belong, right? They created a rule where if someone got a domestic violence restraining order, they were prohibited under federal law from possessing a firearm. Well, there's a problem. See, you've denied someone a right protected by the Constitution without due process of law. You've denied them the property they have in that right, which makes it unconstitutional. And the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals heard the case, and they said, no, you can't remove a person's right simply because a judge issued a restraining order. There needs to be more. I didn't read the entire opinion from the Fifth Circuit, but that's my understanding was there needs to be a due process to that. But that, you see, that's not good enough for politicians today. See, the Attorney General wants the Supreme Court to fast-track hearing the appeal of this Fifth Circuit opinion. Now, again, if someone is truly a danger, if they're a danger to themselves, if they're a danger to society, then I see reason to prohibit them from owning guns. And I'm not an idiot. I'm not a fool. It doesn't mean they won't be able to have guns. It doesn't physically stop them from possessing firearms. It simply makes it illegal for them to possess a firearm. But I've seen way too many instances where, let's say a restraining order was issued not based on enough facts to remove a right, right? You've got a contentious divorce and a restraining order is issued. You have a restraining order that's issued for nonviolent reasons, right? Someone's being annoying. I'd want to see more. Yes, a restraining order has been issued and we'll have a hearing on an order to prohibit firearms based on the facts and details of the case. I'm not surprised that the federal government wants another way to remove arms. But again, I have this little thing called the Constitution, And I know, I'm weird. I think we should actually follow the supreme law of the land. Now, there's plenty more for me to talk about, but I have to take a break. Before I go, though, I'm hoping you'll head to the website constitutionstudy.com. You'll find out all about what we're doing here at the Constitution Study. You'll find out about the program I'm working on, the Constitution Study Patriots. Maybe you can sign up for a mailing list, because when I announce it, guess where I'm going to announce it, right? It's going to be on one of those mailing lists. You can even have my articles and videos emailed directly to you. And if you want to donate, help support the cause that we're running here, I would appreciate that very, very much. Now, another organization I'd like you to look at is Healthy Cell. They are a leading innovator in supplements designed for health at the cellular level. They've got a lot of great products, one of which is REM sleep. Do you have a hard time falling asleep? Are you tired of waking up in the morning still tired? Well, REM sleep is the only sleep supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep, to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed. That's what you get with REM sleep from Healthy Cell. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So please, go to HealthyCell.com. Take a look at all their products. Put your cart together. REM sleep is just one of the many great products they have. When you check out, use that code OUTLOUD. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud. And as a thank you, you get 25% off your first order.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body. And now they found the solution. The miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, everyday Americans, to rejoin the Constitution Study. Today, I'm kind of pondering this idea, you know, the number of times people have told me that the state militia would stand no chance against the U.S. military, and what does that really mean? Not simply from the tactical or strategic standpoint, but from the philosophical, from the point of view of, then are we still free citizens? Are we subjects of a government because we don't believe we could stand up to it? And how far does that idea permeate the American people? Because, we focus, I talk a lot about the reason states have militias. One of the reasons we have the militia is for the security of a free state. That means security not simply from any external threat. That includes the external threat of the federal government. But more often than not, obviously, arms are used for personal defense. And again, a few weeks ago, we had a mass murder in Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville is about an hour up the road from me. It's led to some really crazy things going on here in the state of Tennessee and in the city of Nashville. But one of the things I find interesting is, there's been a lot of discussion since that murder, about the murder of six people, about the guns, about taking the guns away and restricting guns. And you know what? Not nearly enough discussion, in my standpoint, about the person wielding the gun. Now, there have been reports. The person's name is out. I refuse to use it. I don't want them getting any more credit. I will tell you that she identified as transgender. It was a girl who wanted to use male pronouns. Okay. But as we learned more and more, she texted some friends, or a friend, I should say, saying that she planned to die that day. And the friend actually contacted police. It just, there wasn't enough time. And there was been more and more reports of other posts that this lady had made. And some of them could have, did any of them really say, hey, I'm going to go commit mass murder? Apparently not. But there's been one big question a lot of us have been asking for. See, the shooter left a manifesto. And I'm curious, what's in that manifesto? See, a lot have been made by some people about her transgender status. Did that contribute to it? Was it the hormones she was on? Did that contribute to it? We don't know. Some others point to, was she bullied? She used to go to the school. Was she bullied in that school? We don't know. A lot of those answers, I think, would probably come out in the manifesto. The writing, she said, to explain why she was doing this. But that's not being released. See, Metro Nashville PD and the FBI are not releasing the manifesto. Now, not knowing what's in there, there may be a good reason for it. I will admit that there may be a scenario where, we don't want to encourage other people. Maybe, I don't know. But I also know that as soon as it was announced, as it was made known that the murderer was transgender, the entire debate changed. And I have to wonder, would this manifesto cast some light on the role of transgenderism in her decision to commit mass murder, followed by suicide by cop? I don't know. And I try very hard not to take a lack of knowledge and use that as a jumping off point for making a lot of assumptions. But I find it very interesting. Again, we focus on the weapon and not the person wielding the weapon, because it's really the person wielding the weapon that makes all the difference in the world. The very same rifle that so many people have been vilifying for this lady who used it for a mass murder is the same one that was used by police to stop the mass murder. So it's this one-sided, discussion, debate. It's not even a discussion, it's a debate. It's not even a debate. It's a one-sided broadcast that the only answer to this is we have to take guns away from everyday ordinary people. But I think that forgets that everyday ordinary people are the ones that are using these weapons to defend themselves. Take the case of Daniel Perry. Now, Daniel Perry was an Uber driver in Austin, Texas. He was working one day when he found himself in the middle of a Black Lives Matter mob. A protester comes up to his car, points a gun at him. Perry drew his own arm and shot back. We have two gentlemen with firearms. One was being used to threaten the other to defend himself. But here's where life gets interesting. See, it wasn't the Black Lives Matter protester that was charged, at least not that I'm aware of. It was Mr. Perry that was indicted and found guilty for murder by simply defending himself with a firearm. Now, granted, this is Austin, Texas, not exactly what you think of as a stereotypical Texas town. But I want you to consider this. You have, again, two men with guns. One was used to threaten the other. The other shot back. Shot back. He was being threatened and he shot back. Isn't it the person that made the difference? Apparently not in Austin, Texas. In Austin, Texas, when someone threatens you with a gun, defending yourself with a gun is a crime. At least in Austin, Texas. Or what about other places? What about New York City? In July of last year, of 2022, Jose Alba was working in a bodega. For those of you who are not familiar with the term, it's a term used in New York City for a little convenience store. Every neighborhood has several of them. So here he is, he's working behind the counter when he was assaulted. There is video of his attacker, an Austin Simon, standing over him while Mr. Alba sat against the wall. He tried to get past him, but he couldn't. He wasn't allowed. And in fear for his life, Mr. Simon grabbed a knife, stabbed his attacker several times. And he was charged with murder. He was being attacked. He was in a place of business where he was employed. And he was attacked and he defended himself. But Paul, that was a knife. Yeah, that's why the Second Amendment says the right to keep and bear arms. Not simply firearms, arms. But in New York City, he was charged. Now, those charges were eventually dropped, but only after several weeks where this poor man, after being attacked by a citizen, was attacked by the city government. But I think a point often gets lost in the discussion about, well, the militia couldn't do anything about the federal government. And that is the first responsibility of self-defense, of defending yourself, I don't have to defend the entire country. I start by defending myself, and I defend my family, because that's my responsibility. And yes, I want the best tools I can get to do that, but I've also have been willing to take the time to get some training so I can learn to do it better. So when someone tells you, oh, the militia is not going to do anything against it, how about I just be able to defend myself? Or how about this? How about I do what's right simply because it is right? As John Quincy Adams said, the duty is ours, the results are God's. My defense should not be based on the fact that I know I'm going to win. My defense should be based on the fact it's the right thing to do, whether that's defending myself, my family, my neighbors, or some stranger or some that I meet on the street or some law enforcement officer that is being attacked by a criminal. You do what's right because it's the right thing to do, not because you're guaranteed an outcome. Now, if I'm defending myself and my family, and my neighbors get together and say, you know what, this is wrong, we need to defend ourselves, then why? Then we need to do it. It should be because it's the right thing to do. And if a state, if an entire state looks at what the federal government is doing and says, no, we didn't authorize that. The Constitution says quite clearly in the 10th Amendment, we didn't give you the power to do it, you don't have the legal authority to do it. If the federal government is still willing to commit the crime of attempting to illegally impose its will on a state in violation of the Constitution, They are in the wrong. They are the ones committing the criminal act. Don't we have a duty to ourselves to defend ourselves against that? There have been states that have been passing laws saying, well, you know, we're not going to enforce federal gun laws, or we're not going to do this, or executive orders. Tennessee is trying to put in a framework where they could, you know, look at any federal action and say, nope, that's unconstitutional. Here's the proof. We're not going to enforce it in our state. If the federal government comes in to enforce that against the law of the land, the Constitution being the supreme law of the land, shouldn't we defend ourselves against it? In other words, is the idea of, I'm not going to stand up against the federal government because I'm afraid I'm going to lose, does that outweigh, I'm going to stand up for what's right because it's the right thing to do? Or could it be something else? Could it be that we know it's the right thing to do, but we're afraid no one's going to stand with us? I think that may have a lot to do with it. Again, Ukraine, everyone thought Ukraine was going to fold. They were going to fall and nothing flat before the great Russian army. And they didn't. They did it for two reasons, I believe. There's a lot of technical reasons, but two things that I think were very important. One is the Ukrainian people, they fought. They got together, they worked together, and they fought. They didn't fought because they knew they were going to win. They fought because they were defending their homes and their families. I also think they had leadership. They had leadership that saw an opportunity to rally the people, such as when President Zelensky said, I don't need an evacuation, I need ammunition. That there would be people that would stand with them to fight, to defend their homes. I fear part of the American society has become so fractured, so split, so driven apart, we didn't even think about defending our, helping our neighbors defend their homes. I was listening to a radio program earlier today, and it talked about, you know, when organizations, that when there's a disaster, they come in to help. They don't worry about the logistics. They don't worry about the laws. These are everyday citizens. We're going to go in and help. Well, if we could do that for a natural disaster, if we could do that for a man-made disaster, why can't we do that for a government-made crime? And again, you're right. You may not win. If the federal government's willing to use F-15s and nukes against us, we're going to have a hard time prevailing in that, surviving, much less prevailing. But I keep coming back to that basic question. Will I defend myself and my family simply because it is right? I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I going down a wrong path? Have I missed the mark? I don't know. I do see, though, some serious cracks in our society. I see more and more people that have become dependent on government for so many other things. The concept, I remember when we homeschooled our daughter, people would look in our eyes like, what do you mean you're homeschooling your daughter? I was working on a project, and we had several individuals from overseas, one of whom was a very nice lady from Germany. We became friends. And when she asked what grade my daughter was in, I said, no, and we homeschool her. She was shocked. See, in Germany, it's illegal to homeschool. And in the U.S., 90% of students are going to go to a public school, or what we should really call a government school. They've all become dependent on government to train their children. Surprise, surprise, they train their children to be dependent on government. Many depend on government for income, for resources. If they don't like the way something is, they are dependent on government to fix it for them. Has that mentality made it all its way into self-defense, self-preservation? You know, George Washington wrote in his first inaugural, he said, and since the preservation of the sacred fire of liberty and the destiny of the Republican model of government are justly considered as deeply, perhaps as finely staked on the experiment entrusted to the hands of the American people. What if those hands are not willing to work anymore? What if they're not willing to stand up and do what's right simply because it's right, or because they've become afraid of their government? Yeah, I've heard it quoted a lot, although I haven't found proof of it, that Jefferson said, when the people fear the government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there's liberty. Well, if you're telling me that the people of a state are afraid of the federal government, if that statement is true, then do we not live in tyranny? But as I said, we see so many cracks, so many breakdowns in our society. It makes me wonder, would the American people have the heart to stand up to a government that had gone that far right, a federal government that would actually take up arms against its own people because they didn't comply? I don't know. But I wanted to look at that idea a bit more, but I have to take a break first. Before I go, I want to remind you, the Constitution Study is just one of several voices heard right here on America Out Loud Talk Radio. So do like I do. Make AmericaOutLoud.com a daily stop for the latest news and happenings. It's more important than ever that we not only read these articles, that we share them. We take the stories, the podcasts, the videos, we take all of it, and we share it. We share it with friends and family and social media. We expose each other to ideas that maybe we hadn't thought of. See, if you want to secure the blessings of liberty, then you have to share the information that is necessary for liberty to survive.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. Well, we know you because we are you. AmericaOutLoud.com. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Did you know that doctors and nurses have been swabbing their noses with povidone iodine to protect from airborne threats like colds, flus, and pandemic era strains for decades? Cofix RX took that idea and made a more complete nasal formula with lasting cleansing effects. Maybe you're traveling soon or going to an event. Are you concerned somebody nearby might be sick? Maybe the office or classroom stresses you out. Get yourself a bottle of Cofix RX nasal solution. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofix RX nasal solution cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD at CofixRX.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans, to rejoin the Constitution Study. We're looking at the David and Goliath based on the question, if the militia needed to stand up to the federal government, would they stand? It's whenever I bring up the militia, somebody says they'd never survive against the U.S. military. And I understand the tactics. I just don't understand. I think we've lost something in our understanding. I think it was John Adams that said, that this government was designed for a religious and moral people, and it's inadequate for the governing of any other. Which reminds me of something, as I said, been going on around here in Tennessee. Now, I mentioned the mass murder that happened a few weeks ago. Now, this mass murder has set off several demonstrations, some of them dealing with transgender movement, some of them dealing with the question of gun control, and a couple of them got a little out of hand. In fact, on the floor, in the well, at the Tennessee House, not only did you have people in the gallery shouting, we had members of the Tennessee House, the Tennessee legislature, demonstrating on the floor in the well. In fact, a couple of them even picked up bullhorns and led the chants and riots. And these two gentlemen were expelled following the Constitution of the state of Tennessee. It was voted on by the House. There was a supermajority. These men were expelled. And at that point, you know, I thought it was, and again, I still think it was the right thing to do. That these men, they weren't simply expressing an opinion. They didn't simply validate or violate decorum. They literally denied rights to the majority of the citizens of the state of Tennessee. They stopped the legislative process. They were disrupting the system. But the other representatives that represent the vast majority of the citizens of Tennessee were shut down. They were unable to express their opinion because of the bad behavior of these people. The ones in the gallery, the ones in the floor, and the members. And the two members were, first of all, three of them had their committee assignments removed. Two of them were expelled. Both of those gentlemen, I can't call them gentlemen, both of those men have been reinstated by their county legislatures. See, under the Constitution of the state of Tennessee, since there's more than 12 months to the next general election, the county legislature, or the legislature, the closest legislature to where they live, that would be a city or a county legislature, can appoint a temporary replacement, an interim representative. Because if it's more than a year, that's a long time to not have representation. So they could appoint a temporary, and they, both Nashville and Shelby County, which is out Memphis is in Shelby County, voted to take the men that disrupted the legislature and put them back. Now, I'm seeing a lot of articles. I'm hearing a lot of podcasts about what this means. Sadly, I think most of them get it wrong, but the idea that we're going to take men that are demonstratedly disruptive. We are going to reward them for their bad behavior. If these gentlemen were to walk into any other venue, pull out bullhorns, and shout down the opposition, prevent those who were there to do the work of the people from doing their job, if they were to do it anywhere else, they'd be arrested for disorderly conduct and disturbing the peace. But in Nashville and Memphis, they are rewarded. They are praised as heroes. Hello, they're praised as bastions of democracy as they denied the representation, the democratic process for the rest of the state. So when I look at this and say, you know what? Maybe they're right. Maybe the militia could not stand against the federal government because we have people that are more interested in party politics or racial politics than they are in actually governing. Now, these men had something to say about gun control. I would not deny them the right, the opportunity to express themselves in the legislature. But to deny everyone else that right simply because they were performing, I don't know if they were mad or just some political stunt. Is that really the state of America? I moved from New York, the Empire State, to Tennessee to be free, to have my voice heard, to have the laws and rules followed. And here we have Nashville and Memphis sticking their fingers in my eye, saying, we don't care about the rules. We don't care about the laws. We don't care about a Republican form of government. If we get loud, then we need to be heard. And anybody that's against us, well, stick it to you. These men have been heralded not simply in Nashville and Memphis, but in Washington, D.C. Think about that. Washington, D.C., the Biden administration is actually butting into Tennessee politics for no legal purpose. No legal purpose whatsoever. Biden invited these troublemakers. Some people call them insurrectionists. I don't go that far because, although what they did was far beyond what was done on January 6th, I don't think their purpose was insurrection, but it was to deny people the right to govern. They were invited to the White House. Kamala Harris came out to meet these two gentlemen. Now the Senate Democrats are asking the Department of Justice to stick its nose in as well. The Congressional Democrats, they've asked the Department of Justice to investigate whether the legislature violated federal law or the civil rights of these two state representatives who were expelled for their part in the March 30th protest in the Tennessee House. Now, according to the letter that the senators sent, the three participated in peaceful protests. That is a lie. This was not a peaceful protest. You don't have a peaceful protest in an enclosed room with two bullhorns. But you see, lying's how politics works nowadays. The letter claims that they were cited for minor procedural violations as pretext excuses to remove democratically elected representatives. That is another lie. The letter says there are no allegations that these democratically elected officials engaged in any violent or illegal conduct. That is a lie. There is videotape of these men on the floor with their bullhorns disrupting the process in violation of state law. By the way, our Constitution allows the removal of members of the House by a vote of the House. I don't care what, you know what, if the Department of Justice, excuse me, I have a word here for Senate, for Governor Lee. If the Department of Justice comes in to investigate, arrest them for meddling in state politics, the Department of Justice has no legal authority until they have some probable cause that there was actually a violation of a federal law, a legitimate federal law. They have no jurisdiction here. Arrest them. Throw them out. This is important. Governor Lee, you're here to execute the laws of this state. Are you going to bow down to Washington simply because they threatened to? Because a bunch of Democratic lawmakers in Washington, D.C. are lying to the Department of Justice to protect the asses of two Democratic lawmakers in Tennessee? Is that what we've fallen down to? If this is what is what people are supposed to stand for, no, I don't think a militia would stand a chance. Because you couldn't find men and women with the character to stand up for what is right. The character to do the right thing, even if it costs them. That is becoming rarer and rarer in this country. See, I don't think it's a tactical question. I think it's a moral question. A moral question of, do the people know their rights and are they prepared to defend and assert them? It is a moral question of, would you stand up to do the right thing when you're threatened? When the law, when they come after you illegally, do you stand or do you run? That's where we are. That's where we are. And of course, you have Democrats coming to the Democrats. Well, how about the Republican side? Because Governor Lee is a Republican. Now, he's issued an executive order to enhance background check procedures. I've looked at the order. It's basically making sure that the data that's supposed to be collected as part of a background check is actually collected. But there's also reports that he's calling on the Attorney General, I'm sorry, on the General Assembly, to pass a red flag law. All right, I got a problem there. You see, red flag laws, as everyone I've seen so far, violate the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, and they violate the Constitution of the state of Tennessee. Governor Lee said in a press conference, "Our current law is proven and effective in many circumstances, especially with regards to domestic violence. But these new stronger order of protection law will provide the broader population cover safety from those who are in danger to themselves or their population." That's another lie, Mr. Lee. I'm sorry, that's a lie. There is no evidence that anything the Nashville murderer did was a red flag before the fact. The only closest thing you got to a red flag happened literally minutes beforehand. And you're willing to destroy the rights of everyday Tennesseans, what, in order to look good? See, when we talk, I talked about leadership. That is not the leadership that will bring people to defend him. Leadership would be, sorry, Attorney General, sorry, Department of Justice, you have no jurisdiction here. Show me probable cause that we have violated a legitimate federal law, and I'll consider it. Until then, no, go away, get out of here. The type of backbone, the type of spine is rare, especially among politicians. The Republicans in Congress from Tennessee, they introduced a bill to up school security, except school security is not a federal issue. Senators Blackburn and Hagerty proposed this act. I've talked about it before. And now Representative Fleischman has introduced a companion bill in the House. But that's not a federal issue. Now, I personally, in looking at the footage, the Nashville Covenant School did a pretty good job. In fact, the only thing I think they could have done better is to have armed law enforcement on school property. But again, that's a state issue. That's a local issue. That is not a federal issue. And I know people that are yelling at me right now, but Paul, we have to do something. How about we follow the law? If the owners of the Covenant School is a private school, if the owners of the school don't want armed security, if the parents that send their schools, that pay the tuition to send their kids, don't want that school to have greater security, that's ultimately their decision. But it is not the role of the federal government to decide what is best for Nashville. See, we created this thing called federalism. This is a state issue. And I'm getting damn tired of the federal government butting its nose into state issues. Because every time it does, it makes a royal mess of everything. It tries this one size fits all, and it becomes political compromise and partisan, and it never works. It never, what did Reagan say are the nine most dangerous words in the English language? I'm from the government and I'm here to help. That's exactly what they're doing. My impression is they're doing it because, well, political pandering. We want to get brownie points for doing something. Is it legal? We don't care. Is it constitutional? We really don't care. And the sad part is, it infantilizes the states even more. You can't take care of yourself. You can't figure this out yourself. You have to wait for the federal government to come in and do something for you. So maybe those people that say the militia today wouldn't stand a chance, maybe they're right. Maybe there's not enough character left in the American people to stand up for what is right and what is just and what is legal. Then again, maybe there is. Maybe the Blackburns and the Haggertys and the Fleischmans, maybe the representatives, maybe the people in the councils in Nashville and Shelby County, maybe they don't represent most of us. Maybe there are still men and women of character, willing to stand for what is right. I hope there are, because part of my Constitution Study Patriots program, I call the Minutemen. It's going to be groups of men and women ready at a moment's notice to come to the aid and the defense of those who are having their rights attacked. No, I'm not talking about with arms, not unless they're attacked themselves. But men with the knowledge and the education and the backbone to stand up and say no. So to me, that's the difference. In 1776, we had men and women willing to look Britain in the eye and say, no. I'm not seeing enough Americans today that are willing to look in Washington, D.C. right in the eye and say, no. But I hope to find them. And I hope you'll find them. And I hope you'll join me here for the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. Now, if you can't listen then, that's okay. All my shows generally go to podcast a day or two after they're heard on talk radio. You can find them in your favorite podcast app. But do me a favor. Subscribe to the show. Give me a rating or review. It's how other people find the Constitution Study. It's also how the Constitution Study in America Out Loud rises in the ratings. So if you could do that for me, that would be wonderful. You can find all the links you need right there at the homepage of AmericaOutloud.com. But just as I'm looking for Minutemen to come to the aid of others, you can come to the aid of this country by taking this information, taking those links, taking these episodes and sharing them as far as you and wide as you can. That is how we spread the blessings of liberty.